Welcome to What Is It About the Weather, where weather is always our theme, but your weather forecast, my weather forecast, you can get that somewhere else, right? Now, this week we're going to be discussing Morse code, that's right, dots and dashes, and the telegraph, and how that would change our ability to do weather forecasting and really took it to a whole new level. You know, we've done these kind of reverse episodes of did weather change history? Well, this is definitely a case of did history change weather, or specifically weather forecasting. So we'll dive into that, of course, in more detail. But before we get to that, let me just say Happy New Year to everybody. If you're hearing this, I know you're still around and you're doing your thing in 2017. I know it's, you know, 2016 was just kind of a year to put in a book and put on a shelf somewhere. I'm sure we'll revisit it multiple times in the years to come. And that included on the weather front, you know, is some interesting weather patterns going on, strange things in the Arctic this winter, a bit unusual. But just, you know, in general, here we are in the new year. Let's focus on that. Let's move forward. And I know that my weather world is certainly intertwining with my everyday life. Most immediately this week, it's been kind of crazy. One of those social media things, and we've talked about this, and I get back to the same premise and idea for everybody. Have a source of weather forecast that you trust. That when push comes to shove and, you know, life's on the line or safety's on the line or important decisions are on the line you go to, that doesn't mean you can't enjoy random weather tweets and Facebook posts and all that, just perspective. And for those of us who like to share stuff on social media, do remember that not everybody is going to interpret what you post the way you intended it to be interpreted it, unless you, you know, say, you know, clearly on things. So just be aware of the responsibility. And I think hopefully that, you know, we're learning more and more about the responsibility of social media and how important it is in what we try to articulate. And it's not always easy when you have a limited amount of character or those things, you know, with Twitter, for example, or even when you're sharing a picture on Instagram. But, you know, when you look at something like Facebook, you have the opportunity to clarify what you're saying. So take the time to do it when it's important things. Just keep that in mind. But here I am in a location in the southeastern U.S. that we tend to get these snow hype situations or winter weather hype situations, and this week was no different. But the interesting thing is, as it's getting ready to start transpiring later today and into tomorrow, it may end up being a fairly sizable event. There's still a lot of variance in, you know, timing and when it will exactly freeze and how much will we actually get, which is typical with these forecasts for us, right? And that's part of the problem. In social media, somebody put something out there that says, you know, this is what's going to happen. Well, that may be a scenario, and it's likely to change and all that stuff. So, you know me, I'd love there to be tons of snow, and I'll take that. So I don't mind it, but it will be interesting to look back, because if it ends up being a heavy event, which we do have, you know, in my area, let's say on average once every 10 years or so, we get these kind of major snowstorm events, or major for us. Again, it's all relative. And so that adds fuel to the fire about, well, the hype forecasts are right. Well, most of the time the hype forecasts are exactly that. They're hype. So we'll see where it is. And I just look forward to enjoying whatever winter precipitation I get. The other thing that's going on is I'm going to be going back to, well, one of my alma maters, Georgia Tech, and teaching synoptic meteorology this semester. So I just bring that up because it may shift things around when things get posted with respect to the podcast. Overall, nothing's going to change about it happening. Okay, my load's not particularly changing. I'm just doing something a little different than I've done before. But given one of the classes is on around the time when I usually post things, things may shift a little bit in terms of time of day, or I may move things to Thursday as opposed to posting things on Friday, but we'll see. For now, assume that it's going to stay the same. I mean, I can program things to post at a certain time, so it shouldn't be a big deal. But if for some reason things start fluctuating, that might be the explanation of what's going on there. Any case, again, like me, I hope you're having a interesting and weather entwined week out there since we last talked, and that's continuing into 2017 for you. But let's kind of dive into this main topic, right? So like I said, we've done the Did Weather Change history, and we're really kind of flipping things this time. But before we dive into the details about the telegraph and the role it would play, let's step back a little bit, you know, as we quite often do, and put in a little history so that you can understand the context of just how important Morse code and the telegraph was to the advancement of weather forecasting. And quite frankly, to society. I mean, we'll even touch about that element as well. So in the past, I've mentioned people like Hippocrates and Aristotle and some others that existed in what we would consider ancient times by our standards, and their attempts to try to understand the weather and forecast the weather. And they had some interesting hypotheses and ideas about what was going on and what was causing it. Some had some validity, others didn't. Part of that was mentally they were trying to describe weather as if it had developed and occurred locally, and makes a lot of sense for the time of day in which they lived. They didn't, you know, keep in mind the world was flat, right? In many cases, not in all cases, but there wasn't this appreciation that maybe somewhere on the planet, far from them at some point in time, that weather was taking place in a certain way, and that that might impact the weather they were going to see at some future time. All right. So there just wasn't that appreciation or that knowledge. But given our understanding in that day and age, it's very logical to understand why they went about the processes the way they did. And that's, you know, was one of the challenges of science at the time. For things that were localized, they were able to make those advances. For things that were more broad scale in nature, it did make things harder to appreciate, you know, and that's in both the man-made world and in the world of nature at the time. As you know, we learned so many things are tied from can be far away locations, like disease we've talked about before and how it migrates, etc. So in any case, we had that attempt to explain weather, but we didn't necessarily have this appreciation for the relationship of what was happening in another location. Now, as we continue to try to evolve the science, one of the other big things that was detrimental to the process going on was our lack of accurate enough instrumentation to be able to measure the changes in weather conditions and in turn be able to accurately report that in some way. So the next big step would take place in kind of the Renaissance era, let's say, of modernization of instrumentation. That gave us the ability to, you know, whether it was temperature, whether it was humidity, whether it was wind, as we had a better understanding of, and we're trying to improve our understanding of those specific relationships, without the ability to accurately record what was going on, it was very difficult to make advances. So that would be the next phase. And then beyond that, once we were able to start doing that, we were able scientifically, and you know, we were making these changes around that time. This would have been about the time that, you know, really the U.S. was coming into formation. And one of the, I guess, original weather forecasters, and I'm going to go U.S.-centric here, and I by no means mean that this was the only person doing this, but Benjamin Franklin was just very well known and recognized, not only as a diplomat and other things, but for his scientific mind. And other areas of the world, other countries, probably had very similar keen observers that were also well known. And I do want to put that out there, because it's very possible that there were a variety of people making some of these connections that weren't as prominent, or their field of study was in something not related to weather. And we've talked about some cases like that in the past, where they're recognized for one thing, but their interest in weather or, you know, what was going on around them, almost like this podcast, right? It's, you know, it was impacting their life in other ways, and they hadn't really thought about it. But Benjamin Franklin is kind of called America's first weatherman, okay? And there's, again, as always, show notes. See an article on there. There's a nice write-up from a journal many, many years ago about somebody gave a presentation. But so he's just kind of got that honorary title. But again, I don't want to make it sound like we know for sure that he was America's first weatherman. But he was very keen observationally and denoting that and writing it down. And so because of his prominence, we have these historic records from him that we can go and analyze his ability to observe. And he was even one of those people that got involved in creating some of these early almanacs, made fun of them, but, you know, we get back to the same thing. Is would Ben Franklin be viewed the same way today for creating an almanac that was seen as over the top? He acknowledged it over the top, but on social media, would he have given it that same level of warning? So just something to keep in mind. These different day and age, same challenges we face today. But one of the things he did observe, and specifically it's noted that it came about from observations of the moon, actually enough, and some lunar events that were going on, and seeing how reports from different areas of the country and what people were able to see, and then following that weather going forward and how it would impact him. He was one of the first people to recognize that weather was coming, or, you know, at least the type of overall environment was coming and could come from locations, specifically in the mid-latitudes in the northern hemisphere from the west. Okay, so this is not an unusual thing. This is not a U.S.-only thing. But he put that out there and suggested that this was what was going on. However, here was the challenge. This is all great for what we would call observational analysis and investigation in a post-fact scenario, because we didn't have it in advance of anything, and we didn't even have it close to real time. So that would still kind of leave us in this, here's some new ideas, here's some hypothesis about, you know, what, you know, might be an understanding of how weather acts on a larger scale, you know, not necessarily just the local events. I mean, so much in that day and age, you know, as we all know, in the early days, so many people were around coastal areas. And certainly coastal areas have influences that are very localized. And that is why so often, I think, and I'm just putting this forward, that people wanted to explain all of their weather based on local phenomena. But it was through people like Ben Franklin that we had this appreciation that weather somewhere far away, or how the atmosphere was behaving somewhere far away, would ultimately be the large scale aspect of what was going on in days to come. But again, you couldn't investigate that in real time. You know, just think about some guy in 500 miles away back in the day would record weather, and it might take months before it got to somebody that could compare it with, you know, what happened with them on that day or a few days later. So it left the idea, I think these things are related, but it didn't allow a way to really get into that. So the next step kind of in making that transition would be if there was some way to get that information in more of a real-time capacity. And the next step with that would be with things that would transpire around the invention of the telegraph. Okay, so here's what we had, 1800s, right? In the U.S., we're in the mid-1800s. The Smithsonian Institute was getting up to speed. A gentleman by the name of Joseph Henry was involved in that, and he also recognized, you know, what was Samuel Morse's patent at the time, was, you know, this Morse code, this telegraph, that was coming into play and getting off the ground. And so, interestingly, Joseph Henry, recognizing that, was also busy trying to set up these observer networks for the Smithsonian with people around the U.S. that would take accurate data measurements. Again, we now have this better instrumentation, record those, and ultimately send them to him. But even as he was getting started with this and building this network, it was a slow, methodical process, even in the fastest ways to deliver. Let's say something, was transported quickly. It was certainly not going to be quickly enough to do any sort of weather forecast, but it did allow him to begin that process of data collection and analyzing and seeing what the connections might be, and starting to build on prior work that had been done. But the telegraph, quite honestly, would be that leap moment, that game changer, whatever acronym or not acronym, whatever term you want to put around it, that would give you an appreciation for making, just a monumental step forward, in how we could think about the weather and what our weather might be like down the road. So with the advent of the telegraph, and again, as I've talked about, this was not just with weather. This was, let's keep in mind that the telegraph wasn't invented so that we could do weather forecasting. It was invented to greatly expedite, every type of communication. I can't even, sometimes it's hard with these things, I want to step back and say, it was important for war, and that's in the U.S. shortly there, after this transpired, we had the Civil War take place, and a lot of resources were devoted to, using the telegraph for that reason. But it was related to commerce, it was related to any kind of critical, time-sensitive communication that could be shared over great distances almost instantaneously, all right? So, we jumped chasms, we made major leaps forward. Again, whatever you want to, terminology you want to put around it, we made a monumental shift in how we would communicate with one another. And I think it's important to recognize this. I mean, we talk about social media today, and for instance, the way the mobile phones and cellular phones are just changing the world. And in areas, in parts of the world where, traditional telephone landlines have been hard to come by, this technology allows, a monumental leap forward for those individuals. And they're actually able to skip a step. And so they, if people that never had landlines in certain regions of the world can all of a sudden more cheaply get mobile phones and have communication they never had, they see that benefit. But telegraphs were it in this day and age. I mean, it was, just imagine the world 20 years ago, before really even the internet was deep in the play. So the internet would be part of that. But the mobile, landscape that is taking form today between the combination of, cellular phones were in existence 20 years ago, but they really weren't sharing the type of information they are today. So we talk about how much the world has changed, but really the telegraph did exactly the same thing for that time. And I also think it's interesting is when you think back to the mid-1800s, we were communicating. Everything was longhand. Everything was ornate script and all these things. The telegraph would be one of those things that would kind of be the precursor to Twitter today, because you were using these dots and dashes. And the idea was, and there's a great episode on this. I should note that one of the things that kind of reminded me about doing this episode was I don't know if you've ever listened to Stuff I Missed in History Class. It's a pretty well-known podcast. Check it out sometime. And I'll put a link in the show notes to an episode they did on the first transatlantic telegraph cable and all the perils that went along with that. But imagine, royalty at the time in England speaking with, presidents of the United States, and the original telegraphs they sent to one another were very long, but people recognized quickly you can't do that. And telegraphs, as I was saying, were these bursts of quick communication. You always hear them when any TV show has ever tried to do it. So blah, 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 stop, blah, 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 stop. And they'd be these short little terse messages because you couldn't send all these longhand sort of things. So it would be one of the first steps that would create Twitter-like or character-limited types of communication. So we were doing that even 150 years ago. So keep that in mind. This is not a new phenomena that we're dealing with, but it's just a new platform in which we're doing it. And I think it's more mainstream. So people were still writing longhand letters back then, but not if they needed to send something via telegraph. That was the big difference. So the telegraph was going to and did ultimately change the shape of, you know, this industrial age we were coming into and allow for things to happen that never would have happened otherwise. And one of the key things that it did was achieve this with weather forecasting. So as you can imagine, you've got these, you know, let's get back to the Smithsonian example. You got these people around the country that are making these observations about weather, what's going on around them at a given time. Again, not trying to necessarily interpret it, just pulling this information together. Now, all of a sudden, almost instantaneously, they're able to share this weather with people in different parts of the country. And as I mentioned, all this got started at the Smithsonian, then the Civil War in the U.S. took place. But coming out of the Civil War, the Smithsonian group had got this whole network reestablished kind of post-war. But then it was finding it had so many people involved and was trying to gather so much information that they couldn't efficiently do it. And they went and worked with the U.S. government and turned it over. And because of the telegraph being so intertwined with communications during the Civil War, it actually became a department of the Army. Okay, so here you had in 1870, the president at the time, Ulysses S. Grant, put into law, okay, so this was a new law that was put in place, an actual weather service for the U.S. So the U.S. got its first weather service because it was able to do this with a telegraph. But the idea was built around the telegraph. And it wasn't, forecasting would become a part of that. And again, another link in the show notes just about how this whole group of people got started and everything they did. So forecasting the actual weather would become the next step. It started in just relaying the conditions, and that allowed to be able to articulate weather that might be coming from other areas quickly. So if I could send a telegraph to somebody hundreds of miles away, I could give them fair warning that this is what our weather's like here, and it may be something that impacts your weather down the road. Now, there was still, you know, trying to understand, you know, if a cold blizzard was coming, how far south might that blizzard go, or how far east, or whatever it is. And we didn't fully understand all those relationships in detail yet, at least not in a way that we could quickly communicate that. But this would give us what I like to refer to as the surface analysis of what our weather looked like. And then you could analyze that over time and start to understand those relationships, at least at a surface level. And, you know, anybody who knows anything about weather, or even those of you who are not weather weenies and, you know, enjoy what we talk about here in the podcast, but, you know, don't want to delve into the science on a regular basis, know that, plain and simple, the surface is just one element. I mean, you know, we may hypothesize about things that we understand about, you know, weather at the surface, but we all know that what goes on down here, you know, where we're listening, to, well, unless you're listening to it up in a plane. Actually, plane's a great example. You can get up in a plane and fly through the clouds and get up there and see that the weather is different up above than down below, and all that's intertwined, right? So this didn't solve the upper air and our understanding of the upper air, but it began to give us the ability to keenly communicate, because we had better instrumentation, what was going on at these different locations that were spread out across geographic areas. All right. So it simplified that. It gave us a way to do a terse communication of quality data at regular intervals. And that's one of the other things I found interesting is, so this law, like I said, went into place, and these these people were, you know, set up to communicate at certain times. And that also, you know, gives you an understanding of why we do have weather models today that run at specific times, is because we're trying to create these kind of universal snapshots. And so those communications would happen on the telegraph lines at certain times for the same reason. They were giving weather information at set times because they understood the importance of regimented intervals of providing that information. I think one of the other things I found interesting in the law is, so the U.S. Army Signal Service Division of Telegrams and Reports, for the benefit of commerce, just keep that in mind, the focus of providing weather was more about really agriculture at that point in time than it was about safety or lives or that sort of thing. Because, you know, there was still this recognition that whatever somebody was going to report wasn't going to give someone downstream the ability to do a tornado forecast. But it might tell them about a big event that was coming, like a blizzard or, you know, a tropical cyclone that was blowing into certain areas of the country or whatever it might be. But this would be the next step in promoting the science that would allow us to understand at the surface behaviors of what was going on, and take that next step and make the connections and begin to understand things like, you know, fronts, warm fronts, cold fronts, and what we call extratropical cyclones, but, you know, areas of low and high pressure, those sort of things. So really, the telegraph, without it, without being able to communicate this data in a near real-time environment, we would have never been able to do that and make the first steps of doing weather forecast long before we had computers. So there you have it, telegraph. It would change weather forever, even if it was specifically, you know, weather forecast, not a specific weather event. All right. Whew, that was a lot. I know. I get off on some of these things, and sometimes I get going. So I hope you've enjoyed learning a little bit more about how integral of a role the telegraph was in the advancement of weather forecasting. Now, in the month of January, you know, it's first of the month, and I've of course done my normal planning. We're going to hit on something. We're going to hit on this social media topic again. I haven't exactly decided how we're going to play that out, but given how big of a deal it's been here this week, I think it's a good topic to hit. We're also going to get back to kind of language influences and the weather's role in that, and talk about weather and animals a little bit. But I must say, I had this interesting event where I went out to a mountain here called Panola Mountain, and it's an area in the Atlanta area of Georgia. It's one of three that are called monadnocks, and it's a type of geological formation that had to do with cooling lava, etc. But Stone Mountain is the one that anybody who's not from Atlanta may have heard about before. You know, go visit Stone Mountain. But Stone Mountain gets a lot of human traffic, and so it's not preserved. Panola Mountain, they've gone to steps, at least in recent time. You know, humans were probably trampling all over it for a long time to kind of preserve the natural processes going on. And I think we're going to get into the concept of it some episode about, you know, how weather shapes the world around us. And yes, it happens over very long times, but just the processes that go on and the connection there. So all those things are coming up. They'll play out how they play out, right? So as things happen, sometimes I shift things around from episode to episode as to when things are we're gonna cover certain things. Any case, let's wrap up here and let you get on your way. So you know how to get me, right? But let's go through all these things just for our new listeners. What is it about the weather at gmail.com? If you want to touch base about an episode, if you want to touch base about, you know, things you like about the show, things you wish we covered that maybe we haven't covered before, whatever it might be. You can also reach us via the website, whatisitabouttheweather.com, and there's a contact form there. But then also you learn in there about different ways to follow us, whether that's on Twitter, whether it's on, you know, follow me on Facebook, you know, get all that stuff and information there. And I also do want to bring up the YouTube channel. If you haven't been catching the What Is It About the Cloud episodes, just little short videos. I keep them all to about to 1 minute, and I just did one with what we call a false streak hole, or specifically a hole punch cloud. It's a really interesting phenomena. So if you haven't been catching that series, you might want to think about checking that out. Just go to the website and look for the YouTube channel, and you can follow there and be kept up to date on those episodes. And you know, as we talked about before, under the support section, you learn about our RSVP method. Rate, share, validate, and pledge. We'll leave that there. And until next time, may you have interesting and intertwined weather world, because we all know there's much more to weather than the weather itself.
We're tired of hearing our uncle grovel, so please support him on patreon.com/weather.
This is 2 White Sofa Production.